I heard a little story on the radio. It actually was what NPR calls a driveway story. A driveway story is one that's so interesting that even after you get home, you sit in the driveway and finish listening to it. And this was a driveway story. It was about this couple who went to Africa, and they were naturalists. And into the natural world, whatever you would call them. They were into animals. And they were part of some kind of a baboon or a gorilla rescue project. I came in a little late, so I wasn't really quite sure. But the essence of the story was this. There were all these small orphaned primates. And sometimes they would bond with certain of the adults there. And this woman's husband became the object of the affection of one of the little girl primates. And this little girl baby absolutely adored the father, her husband, and just completely gave herself to him completely. And he was smitten in turn and became very affectionate toward this. It just, interestingly, as a side effect, the wife who's telling the story said, somehow the little animal knew that I was the other woman. And she would actually sort of dart out of the bushes and kick her from time to time. But the point of the story is not that aspect of it. She was talking about how the little animal and her husband would play together. And her husband had been a baseball player, she said, so he had a very strong throwing arm. And one of the things he used to do was throw this little gorilla way up in the air. And then it would, you know, just come back down and he would catch her like this. And the wife watching this said that she realized that the only reason that little gorilla could do this was because it had absolute trust in her husband. And so there wasn't, watching her, there wasn't a shred of hesitation or there was no anxiety whatsoever. She just knew she would go up, she would come down. She would be caught every time. And the wife had to realize that she didn't have the courage to love that much. I mean, not even her own husband. She didn't love her own husband as much as the little gorilla did. Because she didn't have that kind of trust that no matter what happened, she would be caught. Now, this is a very romantic idea, and all of popular culture and most of America is based on this idea that somehow or another we put our trust in something and then that thing won't let us down. I remember many years ago when we had the earthquake here in 1989, the one that knocked down a piece of the Bay Bridge, and a number of people were killed in that particular moment in time. A few people, maybe it was you, Gary, someone I know went across the bridge just almost seconds just before it collapsed, just before the earthquake. I mean, it's just like timing is everything. And during that time, I was having a very brief career going into one particular corporation and giving various programs. I was totally unsuited for that work, and my career lasted a very short period of time. But I had a human HR person who liked me. And after the bridge collapsed, the wife of one of the employees of that company was killed. And not that many people died, so anybody who was touched like that, that was really, it wasn't like 9/11 where there were thousands of people. This was just a few. So everybody in the company was quite rattled by this. And she called me, and she wanted me to give a program on faith, on courage, like helping people to deal with the stress of this. Now, of course, the reason I wasn't successful in the corporate world is because I wasn't allowed to talk about God. I was hardly able to hint about God. I could talk just a tiny bit, but there was nothing I could do that could make my actual presentation devotional because it was just against corporate policy. I don't have to go into that. You all work there, you know. Okay. So she wanted me to reassure people, but she didn't want me to talk about God. And it was open between us. So I'm sort of on the phone for a couple of minutes because, you know, my heart goes out to these people. This is not an easy situation. But I said, you know, I just can't do it. She said, well, why don't you just tell them to have faith in themselves or have faith in each other? I said, well, how far did that go when the bridge collapsed? You know, it just didn't take you anywhere. You can have all the faith in the world that you want, but if what you're trying to believe in does not have the power to protect you, does not have the power to guide you, does not even have the power within himself or herself, including us, to keep our own word. You know, much of the time when disappointment takes place, there's no malice intended. There are people in the world who are utterly selfish. It is true. There are people who really have no regard for other people or no capacity to have regard for other people. They think they're concerned about others, but they just can't see it from a big enough perspective. Or the people are greatly sincere, but we don't know what's buried within us, do we? Yesterday I gave a class about the chakras, and there I was again drawing those centers and drawing the little vrittis and the little point in the middle and everything that we want, and then all the magnetism that gets going around it, and not just in this incarnation, but all in the incarnations before. And we do our best, but we just don't know. And karma has a way of just coming up when it's needed. I know I'm waving my right arm around rather comfortably today, and 3 weeks ago I was holding it to my chest like this because, as I told you then, I was riding my bicycle, and I forgot I was riding my bicycle, which is, I don't recommend it. And I turned, and there was another bicycle just in the space that I turned into. I mean, I was 5 feet from that person. Fortunately, I didn't knock her off, just knocked myself off. Totally, just complete airhead. And then I fell to the ground and I hurt my arm. The most interesting thing about an accident is 1 second before it happens, you're fine. You know, you can get a diagnosis and it sort of goes like this. But an accident is, everything is okay, then it's not. A friend of mine, Nitai, actually, he was somewhere, I think it was he was somewhere looking at the view at some natural place, like the Grand Canyon or something. And he was sort of just like, you know, he was with a group and he was walking along like this, but it was even worse. He was with a group and then he turned his head to talk to them and he'd backed right into a sign. Whack, like that. Just 1 second you're fine, the next second, you know, you've got a piece of metal smashing up against your head. Just like that. But all kinds of karma comes to us that way, doesn't it? And we're as focused as we can be, and then we're not. You know, then we're off doing something else. And so the whole problem of trust is not as simple as just affirming that it's going to be true. And even where it comes down to now, what I'm talking about, because we're talking about our five wise and our five foolish virgins, which next year I'm going to try to schedule myself not for this Sunday. This is my tapasya, these poor virgins, and here we are again. But what's being described there is we have these 10 souls, all of whom have dedicated their life in some way or another to the divine search. Virgin represents the pure heart, you know, the innocent reaching up for something that they're aspiring to. The virgin also represents, in this tradition, of course, the lover waiting for her beloved, you know, the moment of consummation of that particular love. But five of these folks succeed, and five of them are just left out. The whole story is so pathetic, I just loathe it. You know, there they are, and they come, and the door is closed, and everything is happening behind it, and you just think, these poor saps, they've been working so hard. But what Master is really talking about is he's really talking about the courage to love. And what this story is really about is on the deepest level, and it's not a simple question to answer, which is, what am I really putting my faith in? What do I really trust? And how powerfully am I able to give myself to that? The story of an avatar, when Master incarnates, you know, as Mukunda Lal Ghosh, is just the middle child of his parents, and he incarnates in India, and there's 8 children in the family, and there's all the story he tells in Autobiography of a Yogi. And then we start hearing the story of his own sadhana, of his own search for God, and the degree to which he's willing to put aside all other considerations and recognize that if I follow this one path, then absolutely everything else I'm seeking will be offered to me. And you have a certain dynamic that goes on in his life, which is first his father, you know, wants to keep him in the household. And then after his mother dies, his older brother, Ananta, who's extremely unsympathetic to his spiritual search and mocks him for what he's trying to do. And when Yogananda, as a young man, as a young teenager, just runs away from home, he's just a boy. And he's in this privileged family, this much-loved family with all of the opportunities that anyone could want. And he's 12 or 13 years old, and he runs away. He intends to go to the Himalayas. He imagines himself wandering through the hills and taming wild tigers with the power of his yogic power. And his brother Ananta pursues him, absolutely, and brings him back, you know, into the fold. But Yogananda absolutely will not be deterred. Ananta tells him, you know, you're throwing your life away. You'll have no security. Your horoscope says you have to marry 3 times. Yogananda takes the horoscope and burns it to ashes. You know, it's just not going to happen that way, because he had complete faith and complete trust in the power of God and Divine Mother to take care of him. He didn't mean to make me comfortable, to make me famous, but to provide whatever he truly needed. And the reason an avatar comes, the reason a master lives a life that has at least some superficial resemblance to the life that we live, is to show us what that looks like, step by step by step. What does it look like to not put our faith in our horoscope, in our father's money, in the career that's promised to us, in the hope of earthly happiness, in the promise of having sons who will take care of me, but just to put our faith 100% completely in God? Seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all these things will be added unto us. I mean, Jesus just makes that statement, and we can all say it. We even sing it as a beautiful chant over and over again. But when it really comes to that point where we have to really give our hearts, whether we give our hearts to other people, and you see, this is the trick about it. We think, oh, I'm detached from this world. I'm really just concentrated on God. But oftentimes we're using that word, those words, not to open ourselves to the experience of life, but to give us a really good excuse for not really allowing anything to really touch us too deeply. Many times I've referred to my years of having to understand Swami Kriyananda. And finally coming to appreciate that the calmness that I saw in him, and the even-mindedness, and the egalitarian way he was able to love people, was not based on a level of self-protection. It was based on exactly the opposite. He had absolutely nothing to lose, because his sense of trust, and he tells this story about when he was driving once down on Big Sur on the highway down by Carmel. Just this was before he started Ananda, and he was going to some place there, and he picked up a hitchhiker, I think, or he met some man, and they started talking about the spiritual life. And Kriyananda said, you know, he thinks, he said, in his life, and he was talking about his visits to India, that he had met 6 people that he thought really were God realized. Swamiji said later, when he really thought about it, he thought it might have been more. But he said, he described this man as a big, hairy bear of a guy, just kind of a ne'er-do-well out in the forest. And Swami said, I think I've met six people in my life who knew God. And the guy in this big voice puts out, as Swami said, his hairy paw, and he says, shake my hand, you just met the seventh, meaning himself, like that. And in another context, Swami talked about picking up a meeting a man who gave him a and they tell you this hard luck story, and they do this super sincere, you know, look, and before you know it, you're given the money, and you can just watch them head over to the liquor store, you know, or to the place where they're going to cop the drugs. I don't mean nobody is ever in trouble, but you know, this really sincere story. So Swami's getting one of these really sincere stories, and he thinks the chances are this man is lying. But if he's not, I would feel so terrible for not helping him. So Swami had a small amount of money, and he gave half of it to the man. The man said, well, I'm going to pay you back. I made a big point of getting his address, you know, because I wouldn't want you to lose your faith in human nature. Swami said, I'm not giving you this money. I'm giving this money to God. He said, if I had any faith in human nature, I would have lost it a very long time ago. That's a very interesting statement in itself. Because here's Swamiji, his entire commitment is based on the belief that God is equally present in all of us, and all of us have the same potential to realize God. And Swami, I watched him labor literally, endlessly, every day. It's the only word for it. He labored endlessly based on that simple premise that everybody has the same potential to realize God. And if he just puts out enough energy, Swamiji himself said, he said, I know it's not true, but I pretend that if I just explain it clearly enough, everyone will understand. He said, and that's an incentive for me to just keep trying to explain it. I'll explain it in terms of money or in terms of marriage or in terms of child raising or in terms of art, so that everyone can see that their happiness really rests with God. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. And if I can just say it in just the right way. But in truth, he knew that all of us are a whirling mass of vrittis, and slowly by slowly, and merely because a person with absolute sincerity promises, doesn't necessarily mean they will have the karmic capacity to keep that promise. But what our challenge is, and this is where Swami was saying, it's not human nature I trust, it's God I trust. And that's the edge that we're always all living on, isn't it? Because it just doesn't work out. It works out for a while on this planet. We have lots of fun. We're coming right now into Christmas, which is such a glorious time here in our temple. We have such beautiful services, and we sing Christmas carols, and we get to just be little children, and it's such a delight, you know, giving our hearts in that wonderful spirit. So it's not as if there's never moments when the power breaks through, the divine power breaks through and comes to us. But on an everyday basis, every day when we have that choice to withdraw and protect ourselves, or to reach out in kindness and love and trust, what are we trusting? How much we trust is how much we can love. How much we can give ourselves without reservation to life, to the opportunities. And it's not even so much, it's a peculiar thing, it's not even so much how we act. It's how much of a barrier we keep within ourselves. Again, with Swamiji, I watched him for so long, and I watched this energy that I would see, and I've described it sometimes physically. In the Bhagavad Gita, they talk about Arjuna having this bow, that the strung bow, and it's a symbol of the straight spine and the lifted chest. And the lifted chest is the lifted heart. We're taking the heart and lifting it toward the spiritual eye. And the profile of that with the straight spine and the slightly raised chest, it looks like a strung bow. And Swami Kriyananda, as a young man, as he grew older, his body changed. But as a young man, his posture was as a strung bow. And even when you'd look at him from the side, you would see that the part of him that met life first was his heart. And there was no weakness of his intellect behind it, absolutely not. But he simply wasn't afraid. He just came out. And that's what you would always feel in his company. You would just feel this fearless relaxation. Even in the midst of great difficulties. Part of the problem, we went through this huge litigation. We were litigated against for more than a decade. And Swami Kriyananda at different times had to testify. In one particular cycle, he had to testify. He'd been accused of every possible thing that the leader of a spiritual organization could be accused of. And then he was supposed to testify and defend himself. And he was actually a terrible witness. He was just a terrible witness because there was no tension in him. Almost anyone who is accused, some part of you says no. And even a jury or everybody in the room reads that resistance. This is happening to me, but I resist. Swami resisted nothing. It wasn't that anything that was being said was true, but there was, what would he resist? Because God was in charge. Divine Mother was taking him exactly where he needed to go. He would be attentive to what he was supposed to do, but there was no resistance to it. What is that word when we're thinking of that little baby gorilla being thrown up in the air? You know, there was no resistance to just going all the way up and coming all the way down, even though it could have been life-threatening if you were afraid. And Divine Mother is always doing that. She's just throwing us all the way up, and we don't even know where we're going to come down. And how do we respond to it? With all this, no, 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 this can't be happening. I haven't spoken of Brian McSweeney when he was a child in a long time, but one of my favorite memories of him, absolute favorite memories, was when he was about 2 and Gary was holding him in his arms. And Brian was very self-directed even then. And Gary was bringing him up, you know, the pride of a father, bringing my only son up to be blessed. And Brian would have none of it. Brian put both his hands, he figured out where we were going to touch him. He put both his hands over his forehead and said in a very loud voice, "No, no, no," and just twisted in Gary's hands, you know, until we both had to give up. But isn't that God is coming to us? A touch of light from the Masters. We invite all of you to come forward and receive the touch of light from the Masters. No, no, no. God invites us to receive the touch of light a lot of times. But who are we trusting? We're trusting my idea of what it's supposed to be. It's not supposed to look like this. Don't you remember? You know, it's not supposed to look like this. We have it all worked out. Just all by ourselves, we have it all worked out. Did you ever make plans as a child? I remember in my early teens when I was just so bewildered, I didn't know what was going on. I was always figuring out the world and just making all these plans that were just so ludicrous. They bore no relationship to anything that was happening anywhere. And so we go through in our little lives. It's what it's supposed to be. The main was, it's not supposed to be this hard. I'm not supposed to be disappointed. You were supposed to behave differently. It was supposed to come out different. How did I get to be so old? You know, all of these things. When Tushti was dying, many of you know that I was there with Surendra and others. And there was a certain transition point that she came to where her body really stopped responding to her. And it was so interesting to watch because there was just this one moment where one of her legs just wouldn't respond anymore because her life force was withdrawing. "What's wrong with my leg?" she said. I said, "Sweetheart, you're dying. That's what's wrong with your leg." Oh yeah, that's right. I'm just having to let go and give everything in. And life is a constant process of that, whether it's the physical body that's dying, our youth that's dying, our dreams that are dying, our careers that are dying, our families that are dying, who knows, just like Helen was reading today. Everything changes. So what do we trust? What do we trust? And how much we trust is how much we love. Is there a loving divine mother who always has us in her hands and is in fact the one carrying us through? And if so, why do we ever worry? Why are we ever afraid? Why do we ever tense up and want it to be different? And every time that happens, don't try to solve it by saying, oh no, it's going to work out, it's going to work out. Solve it by saying, wherever you take me, Divine Mother, that's where I'll go. Wherever you take me. I said once to Swamiji, when everything was going, it must have been during the litigation, it was a terrible mess, period. I don't remember what was crashing, but everything was crashing. And he went to the dentist and he had no cavities. And I, in an attempt to be humorous, said, oh, thank the Lord for little favors. I said like that, just that trivial thing. Absolute sternness. He looked at me and he said, I thank God for everything. That's the power. Why would we not? How much we trust is how much we can love. God bless you.